Hello, TribCast fans. This is State Representative Cindy Burkett, otherwise known as the Vice Chair of the Republican Caucus. My good friends on the other side of the aisle might be a bit confused because they have so many leaders and it's hard to tell who's in charge. So I'm offering free leadership training on the weekends.
Thank you, Representative Burkett. This is Reeve Hamilton here with the TribCast for the first week of February. Our regular listener probably realizes that that intro was a reference to our inability to determine who was the real leader of the Democratic Caucus last week. Here to talk about other things this week is Executive Editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Morgan Smith, reporter of the Texas Tribune.
Hello.
And the one and only Ben Philpott of KUT and the Texas Tribune.
Who's the leader of this podcast? Do we know?
I liked how that was listener single, too.
Well, I'm the leader and Morgan is the chair.
Okay.
Which means I have more power.
No, other way around.
Right? I don't think that's
Isn't
right.
Isn't that right? No, I think that is right.
You may have the titles right, but I don't think you have the power thing right.
Actually, Evan was so enthused by Cindy Burkett's charm school offer that he is over there with her right now. That's learning a few lessons.
Has he signed up all of the Tribune reporters for it?
Probably. And maybe he'll learn how to make a Subway sandwich.
Let's move on. We should start with the school finance decision that came down this week, which basically said that our school finance system is unconstitutional. Is that correct, Morgan?
That's right. Trial court judge here in Travis County ruled in favor of more than 600 school districts that have sued the state after.
Out of how many?
It's about two-thirds of the school districts, but they serve three-fourths of the state's student population. So it's a majority.
And is it all the urban districts?
I think, yeah, it's all of the major districts. It represents districts from virtually, every kind
part of
category
the,
that you could really
Were there
pick
some
out.
School districts that were just like, oh, actually the financing is fine for me?
Are none that said that that they were fine with it, but there are several that just opted not to join the suit because they didn't want to have to pay for it. Though, if they're successful, part of the agreement is the award of attorney's fees. So, but yeah, I mean, the districts that don't join are still going to benefit from whatever ruling comes down. So at some point, they kind of have to do a cost-benefit analysis of whether or not they want to take part. But anyways, Judge John Dietz here in Travis County made what is the most comprehensive school finance ruling even in the past six rounds of this litigation. He said the system, not only did it create an unconstitutional statewide property tax because districts are being forced to raise funds locally to pay for public education, but that it was also inequitable and inadequate, which are both requirements under the Texas Constitution. So in previous rulings, we've had a ruling on the statewide property tax issue. Way back, we had a ruling on the equity issue. And we also have had a ruling on the adequacy issue, but never all together in this kind of one sweeping decision, which is, of course, going to be appealed to the Texas Supreme Court by the state.
So he came in later, and I couldn't tell whether this was informally or from the bench, and saying that we ought to spend another $2,000 per student.
Yeah, I think he said that maybe in an interview afterwards, he made some mention of that in his remarks from the bench. He was the judge in the 2004 court case at the trial level, and so this is an issue that he's really given, Judge Dietz has really, I think, given a lot of thought to and studied, and before he announced his ruling, he gave these remarks kind of talking about the role of public education in society and why it's something that, it's up to the citizens to support, and he kind of repeated something that he said in 2004, which he said, education costs money, but ignorance costs more money. And I think in the midst of those remarks, he said, it's up to us to decide, hey, we want these higher standards, and then also in saying that, we have to say, be willing to pay for the money that costs. And that's, I think, the context in which he said we need to be spending this extra amount of money per child.
And 2,000 more per child was something like
$10 or $11 billion.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and so part of the, so he ruled from the bench on Monday. And so we have kind of the outline of what he said and what he has decided on these issues, but he's not going to issue a more detailed written response that would include a timeline for the remedies and kind of what the state has to do to make this right for another 4 to 6 weeks. And that's also going to be the time at which the state would file its appeal, most likely to the Texas Supreme Court, but it's also possible that they could file it just to the Third Court of Appeals, though that's probably not going to be what happens. And then the other thing we should mention is that there were, and it, aside from the school districts that were a part of the lawsuit, there were the Charter School Association and a group that represented parents who support school choice and business interests who are asking for greater efficiency, less regulation in the public education system. The judge said, you know, you've brought up a lot of good points in your arguments, but I don't really feel like this is, it's not the place for the court to decide this. I think that all of the issues that, that you've raised are under the purview of the legislature and their policy making.
Does that include the charter school facility stuff, or did he just essentially say, well, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you're guaranteed to get it?
He said that their claims did not rise to the level of a constitutional violation, and also said that it was the legislature's right to decide to fund charter schools differently than traditional public schools. Yeah.
So, Judge Dietz has said $10 billion. Just the number he threw out, but the state can't do that without any major revision of tax law. The Supreme Court can obviously knock it down to a lower amount, but...
What if we just didn't bother funding the water plan this time around?
Well, they're not going to do anything with this school finance ruling until they get a Supreme Court ruling.
Right.
Because they're going to wait and see, you know, as Morgan says, if they go all the way through the slow appeal, go through the Third Court of Appeals and up that way, that's a longer appeal. You know, so there's two things here. One of them is, do you hold money back in the budget? David Dewhurst has said hold back a couple billion. You know, Strauss and Perry have both sort of nodded at that and said it's a good idea without committing to a dollar amount. So they know that they're going to need some money, or they assume that they're going to need some money later. School finances always or often has, you know, produced either tax bills or tax rewrites or fees or something. You know, there's always a big budget session. And so part of the question is, when does the Supremes come in with a final ruling, and when does the legislature come back? The Supremes ruled in, say, make something up. If they move
2027.
that'll be three or four school finance suits from now. If they rule sometime in the summer, then you could have a special session in the fall. And the question would be, do you want to have a special session on school finance before or after the March
next
primaries?
Election, yeah.
Right.
If you are a kid who is, let's say the decision is upheld and you're a kid who's going through this unconstitutionally financed school system, do you get anything?
No.
To make up for it?
No.
You don't.
that's too bad.
But I remember the last time we had this, we had the new creation of the new franchise tax, or the reworking,
right,
or however.
Right.
Although that apparently didn't actually raise the funds that were needed to fund ruling was. It just seems like, and I realize, again, the Supreme Court can knock this down and say, no, maybe add $500 per kid or whatever, but it seems like this is setting up to be a larger budget crunch than the last case.
Well, so the last case, you know, was largely about the state was charging a de facto statewide property tax. And basically what they said was, you know, the state has a cap on what districts can charge, and because the state was underfunding education and districts were having to make up the difference,
and being
too many
at the max cap,
too many of the districts got to the maximum cap, and since that maximum cap was set by the state, it was a de facto statewide property tax. So what the state did in trying to fix that was come back and say, okay, we're going to
add discretion,
put a bunch of state money in the system so that you no longer are at the cap, and we're going to move the cap a little bit. So now the state's spending about $10 billion a year, you know, for quote-unquote local property tax relief, and Dietz says that's no longer working. That's part of the ruling, right?
Yeah.
So, and then they come in, and I guess at some point in this conversation, if he's saying the system's not adequate, he's going to have to say, or someone's going to have to say what adequate means. That's where we get to the $2,000 per student, or something like it.
And I think part of the remedy is that at least one of the school district's groups is asking for is for the court to mandate a periodic evaluation or study of how much it actually costs to educate students in Texas and to make sure that all of the formulas that the state is using is updated. And that actually is a state law right now. It's just not enforced, and we have certain formulas that haven't been updated since the early 80s.
So are they going to rewrite the, do you think they're going to have to rewrite those formulas in this process?
I do. I think that that's part of that is going to be something that school districts are seeking as remedies pretty forcefully. We'll have to see if that's something that the Supreme Court includes in its ruling.
And could that be something like the weight on a non-English speaker is 30 exactly. years out of date from what it needs to
be? Yeah, exactly.
Well, they also have this thing that's sort of compounded as these cases have gone by. They've got this hold harmless thing where they decide, you know, I mean, it's largely political, but they decide, okay, we're going to rewrite the school finance system, and this has to do a lot with equity. That district's getting too much. This district's not getting enough. And in order to keep anybody from losing money, they do what they call a hold harmless agreement. And they say, we're going to hold you harmless, and we're not going to lower the cost. We're not going to lower what you get. We're going to raise everybody else's. And that has compounded so much that it's stuck in a lot of these formulas where the school districts look up and they say, you know, we've got these weights for bilingual students, these weights for special needs students, and all of these hold harmless agreements. So they've got a lot of stuff. If they wanted to go back in and sort of rework this whole thing and unwind all of this, it could really be complex.
Does reaction to this decision break down along partisan lines? And if so, does it at all play into the coming school choice debate?
Well, I think I was thinking about ways that it might affect the current legislative session. And I mean, one of the parties in the lawsuit was, you know, advocating for school choice. They were putting on a whole line of evidence, calling up witnesses in support of really expanding and breaking down a lot of the regulations that are in the public school system right now. And that's something that, you know, if lawmakers are wanting to advance that during this session, they can, you know, they have a whole, I mean, that's in the court record, and they can, that, and it has been, you know, gotten all this public exposure, and they can really draw on that to support their case. I think it could also add urgency to charter school, the case for charter school changes to the charter school law, because we see that, you know, the trial judge has said, we're not going to take, you know, I'm not, I think it's the legislature's decision to lift the cap on statewide charter contracts, which is something that charter school advocates have wanted for a very long time. And so you can see, you would maybe see an added force and an added, just an added importance to passing that kind of legislation this session.
But how much of the suit was about education and how much of it was just about financing education? I mean, it sounds a little bit like Dietz threw the education stuff over to the side.
I think, you know, in his ruling, he had to kind of limit, I think, to, you know, what the constitutional requirements were. But I think much of the trial talked about, you know, things like what is the value of a pre-K education and why is that something that should be considered an adequate part of, you know, what's an adequate education for a student in Texas. It talked about, you know, why is what charter school, why are charter schools more efficient than traditional public schools, or should they be required to, should traditional school districts operate under the same regulations that mm-hmm. that charter schools do? A lot of that came up in the trial, though I guess, you know, the finance was the focus of the specific ruling.
Do you see where the state's going to go on appeal? I mean, is there a particular part of the ruling that you've heard the state's looking at? I know they haven't seen a written ruling yet, but is there some particular piece of this that the state's going, no, that's wrong?
I mean, I think the state is going to attack all parts of this. They were very forceful in their closing arguments. But I think that what might end up being the focus of their appeal is they're going to say, well, and this is something that was kind of alluded to in the last Supreme Court decision, but they're going to say, well, despite all of this, we have seen these improvements in student achievement in Texas, so it can't really be that bad, and we should be looking at not at the amount of money and comparing the amount of money that we're putting in, which is less, but we should be looking at the output of student achievement instead of what's going into the system, I guess.
Well, can we move on from how do you solve a problem like school finance to how do you solve a problem like CPRIT, which I know Ben has been following, and seems like it's getting pretty heated over in the, I guess, both the House and the Senate committees.
It's no TYC committee hearing, but that's a reference to 2005, if anybody gets that. But anyway,
you got to talk about what CPRIT is.
So CPRIT, Cancer Prevention and Research Institute of Texas, they gave out some naughty grants. They should not have been giving out certain grants. They gave them out.
Well, they gave $25 million to a group that didn't exist and didn't really meet the criteria.
Yeah, that had a low science score on its scientific review panel.
Because it didn't exist, I guess, right?
Right.
They gave out some with the understanding, this kind of came out in some testimony at a hearing, I think it was the Senate Finance hearing yesterday afternoon, that you know the review board essentially received a bunch of, a couple of grant applications and said, okay, so we should approve these. And they assumed that they had gone through the oversight review process, and they had not. But every other grant that they had gotten to this level had gone through the process. So when these were brought to them and said, "Okay, here are some that we think you should approve," they just assumed that it was because it had gone through all the right steps, and they hadn't.
And a lot of their top executives have left.
Yes, although apparently some may be back at the Capitol later this week. Or next. I saw a quick email this morning.
This is for that regular listener we have. This is the thing that Evan Smith questioned whether or not it was a scandal for many minutes in one Tribcast. Well,
yeah,
has it reached the scandal level yet?
Oh, gosh. Has it reached the scandal level yet? Well, nobody's been able to... there's been some speculation. Well, was this just another slush fund for business partners? Was this something where people who had connections within state government could come and pitch an idea, and whether or not the idea had any merit at all, would it be able to get several million dollars? That it doesn't appear that smoking gun has yet come up yet. There's also a question, is this something that's just given out to people that made large campaign donations to Governor Perry or other big, Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst, other big politicians in the state? That has not exactly, there have been a couple of little lines drawn, but not any big glaring, oh, look, here's, $5 million that was given to Perry's campaign, right, and then $25 million went out the other way. But it's, at the very least, it is something where there were rules put in place by the legislature in 2007 when they created this for how grants would be given out, and safeguards put in place so that these kind of questions could be answered with every review process. And according to the state auditor, the system, and this was a quote he said twice yesterday, the system did not fail the people running CPRIT. The people running CPRIT failed the system. So in other words, they for whatever reason, be it negligence, be it incompetence, be it direct decision to go around the rules were circumvented. The rules should have worked. They just weren't followed.
But to your question, they haven't got to the scandal stage in the sense that they haven't affixed blame yet. But I mean, they clearly have found a bunch of stuff wrong over there. And now they're trying to figure out whether A, was that criminal? B, is there some way we can control it? And C, who's responsible for this? And all those are scandal questions.
And we've got an attorney general. Attorney general still looking into this, I believe. And the
there's a House
integrity.
On it, right?
What's the Austin thing? The integrity unit at the
public integrity unit.
At the Travis County DA's is looking into it as well. Lawmakers are mad about this. I mean, mostly because it's, they set this up to, as Governor Perry said over and over again, to cure cancer.
Well, it's a big feel-good story.
It is.
A lot of people were proud of. The state voted to put in tons of money.
Overwhelmingly, yeah. $3 billion over 10 years.
It started in a State of the State speech. It was one of those, this was a few years ago. Perry suggested selling the Texas lottery. Remember this?
He said, give everyone HPV vaccine.
This is like the $10,000 degree of cancer research.
It was going to sell the Texas lottery, and they were going to use the money to set up a cancer research institute, which became CPRIT later, and to buy health insurance for the poor, which sounds like something a Democratic governor would propose, but it was a Perry deal. They didn't sell the lottery, as it turns out, but they did do this $3 billion bond issue. Mm-hmm. And they were all, like you say, I mean, it was a real feel-good thing. You know, everybody went home with a T-shirt and a bumper sticker. And
sure, everyone got their picture made with Lance Armstrong when he came around the Capitol.
And now
How's that going?
And, yeah.
and now they're all running away from it like crazy. It's not, you know, it probably doesn't rise at this point to the level of scandal, but it would be kind of surprising
but the
if
people
it didn't
that,
develop into
the people that wrote the original bills are very... they're very hurt and upset by this because, again, they feel like this was an extremely important program to create, could do amazing good, you know, down the road.
Right.
And they feel like they've been duped by the people that were put in charge of it.
And they have, is it Jane Nelson has filed a bill to put in more safeguards and more accountability measures for it? And
Wendy Davis has too, but I believe Wendy, she's been putting in bills for everything.
But it's, but I mean, I think Senator Seliger from the Republican from Amarillo said it pretty bluntly earlier this week when he just said, I don't see how a thing this good could have gotten to a point where there's little justification not to just pull the plug and start the whole thing over. Because when you say, oh, this is the new secret now with accountability?
Yeah.
I mean, is that really going to fly?
Well, he was the one that was asking the toughest questions yesterday and maybe the most combative questions during the hearing, at least from what I saw. He was going after the company that didn't exist that got $25 million. Essentially this company also had a role in reviewing what companies should be given grants at CPRIT. So they came back around and said, well, we've reviewed this and we think that we should be the ones that get this grant. And then the scientific score on that one was low because it had not really been, there was nothing really to test on it. And it sounds like a huge mess.
Well, and then you've got this next problem of the next person that comes up in state government or city government or whatever and wants to pass a bond issue has to answer voters and say, well, what'd you do with that cancer bond? You know, what'd you do with all of that? I mean, this is a classic, you know, they're not going to trust you again. You created a giant cookie jar with a bunch of hands already in it.
Yeah. And you know, this all falls in line with some of the stuff that the comptroller's put out over the last year. All of her, you know, transparency reports, especially on bond debt at the local level and at the state level. And, you know, I think more and more you're not going to see people wanting to. And at the same time, I mean, the state could be ready to turn right around and say, hey, guess what? We need bonds for actually working on building roads in the state.
Right. Or water.
Or water.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah, we're going to give money from
or
the rainy
education.
Day fund this session. But, you know, in the next session, we're going to have to look at bonds to follow up on the rainy day money. And people are going to be like, well, wait a minute.
Right.
You know, you couldn't even cure cancer, right? Why would we let you build a road?
That's a heck of a thing when it turns out you couldn't even cure cancer, right?
Well, let's move from that mess.
I think some voters think that way. They're like, you know, this was something. I mean, how do you screw this up? This is a good idea. This is a great goal.
Right.
And you still couldn't do it right, you know. And then you're like, but construct a road. We already think that construction companies are, you know, reprehensible. Why would we let you have money to pay them?
So you're saying we should just do tolled cancer research, privatized cancer?
Maybe we
research.
Should. Yeah, tolled cancer projects. That'd be good.
Well, let's move from that mess to the mess that has occupied my weekend, at least, which was the situation between the UT system and UT Austin.
Say Belarus. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, the Belarus thing is also a catastrophe. If anyone out there doesn't know, Belarus, which is no one's idea of a humanitarian nation, came out with a human rights report that said that the U.S. is suppressing Texas.
Why does Belarus have a human rights report?
I think because it's sick of being put on people's bad human rights reports.
Meanwhile, at UT.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back on the 40 acres. Da-da-da.
Well, so there's this weird situation that sort of unfolded. A lot of credit should go to the Daily Texan for doing this open records request for documents on inappropriate relationships over the last few years at UT. It ended up coming up with this situation in which their quarterback's coach, Major Applewhite, for the football team, obviously, not the quarterback's coach for the basketball team.
He's the assistant offensive coordinator.
Right.
Actually, he may have been promoted to offensive
coordinator. He's the co-offensive coordinator. I don't know why is it not the offensive co-coordinator, but I don't know anything about football. So let's move on.
He went to Vanderbilt.
He's either the leader or the chair. We're not sure which.
He had a consensual encounter with...
One-night stand.
thank you.
Yeah.
With an adult student who's not on the football team in 2009, and he was reprimanded by the athletic director, and the reprimand included almost a full year of a frozen salary.
Yeah, I've got to say that as a UT employee who's essentially had my salary frozen since 2003, I don't give a crap
what
about
did
the
you
fact
do?
That
they... Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
He also had
I didn't don't coach the other football, end of the that's
why. He also had to go to mandatory counseling, which I know they have at KUT.
I enjoy my counseling. Yeah.
But so anyway, so this came out on Friday. The UT Regents called a very rare Sunday meeting.
So they could all get together on the phone and watch the Super Bowl.
Nobody that works there now seems to be able to recall the last time they had an emergency Sunday meeting. But they had it for this situation. And it was on Super Bowl Sunday, and it took almost, you know, it was 2.5 hours about. A lot of reporters had to go and just sit there just so that they could be there in case something happened. Nothing happened. They put out a statement a little bit later saying that they would study policies on relationships between employees and students. But it's actually turning into this incredibly...
How do they not already have policies?
They do have policies.
Yeah. But I think, if you want to read between the lines, this is, we need to figure out a way to not lose millions of dollars to the coming lawsuit from the track coach that we fired at UT.
Right. That's one of the big wrinkles in this thing, is that
right.
A track coach who had...
Deb Kearney.
Right. She had a... sort of ongoing relationship with a student athlete on her team about a decade ago.
Well,
right.
That's a little bit. I mean, those circumstances are
absolutely
different. Yeah.
That's true,
but she got fired.
A lawsuit's coming, I believe.
Yeah. And there are differences that people are sensitive to, right? She's a woman. This other guy's a guy. She was having an affair with another woman. He was having an affair another woman.
You know, the fact that this was a student on a team position.
I definitely think that her offense goes to a higher level than his, but that doesn't mean that a lawsuit won't be
right. Possible. And the loss, I mean, that those are things. The things that Reeve mentioned are things that could
and
be
so
brought
is
up.
This
in
about, may
so
not be in the policy. That may not be in the policy.
Let me ask this. I mean, is this about sports? Is this about coaches and students, or is this about power at UT and about the board and this continuing struggle with Bill Powers?
I mean, there's a lot of talk that it is about the latter, right? Is that the board has been looking for a way to find an excuse to question the oversight at the University of Texas at Austin as a whole.
Right.
And that so that they decide to dig into this. I mean, you're getting sort of Senator Zaffirini, Democrat of Laredo, who has been a big UT Austin supporter.
And whose district now goes into Travis County.
Right? She said that this meeting was uncalled for. It was unnecessary. The situation was dealt with well by UT Austin, who's the people that should be dealing with the situation, and it just sort of called negative attention to the system, which is bad for the institution. But the Regents said that they have a responsibility to sort of protect the safety and ethics and morality of their
and pocketbook
of their students and whatnot. Yeah.
I mean, again, I still think this all comes down, you know, the University of Texas may be all lawyered up, but I'm sure the Regents are like, well, wait a minute, what are we talking about here? What's Bev going to, you know, what's she going to want, and what are we going to end up with?
And of course, the Regents have every right to be appraised of these situations. I mean,
so what made it an emergency? Did this start with when the Daily Texans thing came in? I mean, they announced the Major Applewhite thing on Friday night.
That's also when they announced the meeting.
And the Sunday meeting, and it's just, is the prompt the Daily Texan, or is there something else going on here?
Well, the prompt was that this information was coming out.
Right.
Why they had to have an emergency meeting, I mean, that's what they decided was necessary. I mean, you could probably have been appraised of it at other times, but they decided they didn't all come to Austin for it. It wasn't that big an emergency.
Right.
But it will be interesting to play. This has caused significant tension between the system and the university, probably will continue to do so. And if, you know, the sort of conspiracy theories have anything to them, and most of the talk around town is that they do, it, you know, look for at least a head to roll somewhere.
Well, and you know, you want to get back to the football field. This has been a crap year for Texas football, and this is just another thing.
And for Texas basketball, and I mean, the teams are losing right now.
They are. I mean, you know, the football team won 9 games. There are schools around the country that would give their left arm to win 9 games.
That probably wouldn't help.
None of them are in Texas.
That's true. None of them are in Texas. And none of them just moved to the SEC and won a Heisman Trophy.
Right.
So, you know, this is just another example of what you know, from the fans' point of view, which I'm not. I went to the University of Alabama. Roll Tide.
We didn't know that.
You didn't know that? No. I'll be damned.
they have a football team?
Yes. But, you know, from a fan's point of view, this is another example of what they consider Mac Brown's inability to control everything. With, you know, the best football coaches right now are CEOs. They have their hands on every aspect of what's going on in that corporation, that football team. And they say this is another example of him not having institutional control and that he should be fired. Now, you know, I think that there are a lot of other more important reasons why this has become a big story. But that's I think that could play out for a while, too.
But your main question is just what does it mean for next season?
I think, well, I mean, there are, and this goes back to money again, there are people giving thousands upon thousands of dollars to the University of Texas Foundation for the privilege to be able to purchase season tickets at the multi-million dollar recently renovated UT football stadium. And if the University of Texas doesn't think that at some point they're going to be no longer satisfied with 8 and 9 win seasons with a coach that may not have, you know, that they believe may not have institutional control over the program, you know, that's going to affect their bottom line at some point.
Well, if those people would like to instead donate their money to us here at the Tribcast, where we're having a great season, they can...
Hell yeah.
They can email...
Lots of wins.
They can wire us or send questions and comments to tribcast@texastribune.org. Yeah, we did have that one loss, though. That was pretty bad.
Let's not talk about that.
On behalf of Ben, Morgan, Ross, our producer Todd... This is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
I think if I were the Subway's lawyer, I'd be like, actually, you could stand to lose another inch.
If you were Subway's lawyer, you'd have a lot more money.
God, I know.